Hey, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer, and this podcast is pretty simple. We look at the intersection of creativity and student learning, and we kind of focus on a new theme each month. And last month, we thought about student choice and what it meant to have a choice-driven classroom. And this month, we're focusing on the future of learning. What does it mean to raise up the next generation of students to be innovative and creative? And what are the skills necessary that they'll need? And more importantly, what are the mindsets that they'll need? And an accidental theme that has emerged from this is this whole idea of vintage. Things that are older that are actually more relevant now. That sometimes the most relevant thing to be isn't, quote, up to date, but to be something beyond that, to recover something lost in the past. And that's probably going to be our theme next month, is going to be vintage. But for now, it's the future of learning, and we're going to get on into this topic of deep work. That's going to be the main idea here. So let's dive in and get started. Last Friday, I had a massive list of projects that I needed to work on. So I took my computer upstairs and began working on the edits for a book on student engagement and flow theory. Okay, that was the intention. Instead, I stared at Facebook and I continued to stare at it and scroll down till I found an interesting clickbait listicle, something about, you know, overrated movies or something like that. And this led me to looking up something on Wikipedia. And then I started working on one project, then opened up a new tab and worked on another. Then I went back and checked something else on Wikipedia, and then I went to Facebook, and then I chatted with somebody on Twitter. And this lasted for an hour before I flipped on Netflix to take a break. I kept on the TV. It was on in the background as I continued to ping-pong back and forth between projects, and then sometimes I would just slip right back in into Facebook or Twitter. That was Friday. And I contrast this to last Thursday, the day before. And that's when I got up at 5 in the morning, and I spent 2 hours zoned in on writing before taking my son to school and meeting with my dean at school, Scott. He's awesome. And then I spent another hour and a half, maybe 2 hours, focused on reflecting on my teaching, writing a blog post, getting administrative work done as quickly as possible. And then I met a friend for lunch and spent another 2 hours afterwards focusing on creating a sketchy video. A few times when I hit a wall creatively, so when things just weren't working out properly and I was frustrated, I would take a 5-minute walk over to the creek. That's right, I work somewhere where there's a creek that's bizarre and crazy. Then I would walk back to my office. Those were my 2 days. And so here's where it gets odd. Thursday felt like a relaxed day because I had lunch with a friend and a leisurely meeting with my dean. And Friday felt like a hurried, jam-packed day with no real breaks, even though I had the TV on and social media going. However, I was far more productive on Thursday. I worked uninterrupted on single projects for 2-hour segments. Both the quality and the quantity increased as a result. Now, I was hitting in this idea of deep work. There's a concept that Cal Newport, and he's one of my favorite authors that I've read lately, he refers to it as deep work. And you can see it in his book with the same name, Deep Work, and I highly, highly recommend it. And it's what happens when you delve into meaningful, sustained work that requires full cognitive attention. Newport argues that the constant interruptions of email and social media reduce our attention while also increasing our cognitive load and essentially depleting our resources before we have a chance to really finish a task to its fullest. This ultimately reduces our ability to get into this place of deep work. And when you engage in deep work, you are more likely to hit a state of flow. And that's where people kind of are in the zone in their work. It's when you feel fully alive, fully connected, fully focused. Time seems to fly by. You lose track of what you're doing. That's when you're in the zone. That's when you are hitting a state of flow. So, unfortunately, we live in a world of constant distractions and instant media where the ping-ponging of our devices and the little notifications we get beckon us from one urgent task to the next. And this sense of deep work has become both vital and challenging in a world of these incessant distractions. If we want students to become deep thinkers, they need to engage in deep work. If we want them to become makers and philosophers and researchers, they need to have the mental endurance to stick with a task long term. They need to be hitting that state of flow. But here's the thing. Students are distracted. And not because they're young or because they're students or because they're digital natives or any of that. But because they inhabit this same culture that we inhabit. This same culture of amusement and entertainment and, well, distraction. Case in point, when I taught middle school, my students had a hard time staying focused at first. Although we had a few class discussions and the occasional direct instruction, our mix of project-based learning and design thinking meant that students often spent the entire class period focused on one larger task and one major project. Many students lacked creative endurance. They struggled to hit a state of flow in their work. And that was happening all the time. They would go on to YouTube. They would check their Instagram feed. They would talk to the person next to them. And it's easy to blame the devices here. Just take the computers away and you'll be fine. However, within a few weeks of doing deeper work, students were editing videos, writing blog posts, and crafting code. They were engaged in deeper work. It's easy to blame social media, but connectivity is often a great thing. It's how my students shared their content with the world, and sometimes it was how they engaged in research when they would be interviewing an expert. It's easy to blame YouTube. And yet, my students often shared stories of things they were learning because of YouTube. And most of our class tutorials were, you guessed it, on YouTube. These videos had actually helped them engage in the deep work when they were stuck. The issue isn't the technology. It's with the way we passively consume it as a culture. It's what happens when you scroll through a newsfeed without choosing to be present. It's what happens when you binge watch Netflix as you work. It's not just the passivity, though. It's the constant barrage of interruptions, the little red numbers that pop up on your phone, and the always open tab beckoning us to watch another cat video. So with that in mind, here are 7 ways to facilitate deep work. Number 1, do the dreaded work first. I'm not sure where I heard this productivity hack, but it totally works. And, well, at least it's totally worked for me. There's no science behind it. Well, there might be, but I don't know what the research is behind it. I'll just toss it out to you. You do that crappy task that you don't want to do. You know that, like, email you have to send or that phone call you have to make, that whatever you don't want to do. You do that first, and then it's not looming in your mind the rest of the day. Number 2, delete social media from your phone. My friend Chris Weeger is an amazingly present person when you meet him. And I ask him about this. You know, why are you so present? Why are you so there when you're around people? And he mentioned that he had deleted Twitter and Facebook from his phone. A few months later, I did the same thing. Now, when I hit a wall at work, for example, I go for a walk instead of checking Facebook. Often these are the moments when I have the best ideas, these moments of slack when I can just go for a walk and do something. Number 3, choose the right background noise. The research on this is actually really complicated, but ambient noise and white noise can both increase productivity and improve your mood. But lyrical music and speech, think podcasts or TV shows in the background, can actually get in the way of deep work, especially if the work you're doing is in any way, shape, or form language related. The goal is not always silence, though. A noisy coffee shop or the pattering of rain can actually promote deep work when the actual silence feels too cold and sterile. So the goal is not necessarily just, you know, avoid noise altogether. It's to think critically about the noise that you are surrounding yourself with. Number four, focus on one project at a time. Multitasking is a myth. And it's a deceptive one at that. What feels like hyper-productivity is actually interrupted productivity. Instead of doing multiple tasks at once, what you're actually doing in those moments is switch tasking. And this start and stop process prevents them from hitting a state of flow and engaging in deep work. And that's a real struggle. This happens with anyone who says, quote, I'm a good multitasker. Now, I want to point something out. Sometimes a project will have multiple tasks within it. For example, you might be doing a project where you have a browser open and you have that open and you're moving something from this program into that program into that program. And that's not multitasking. That's still a single task moving seamlessly through it because your focus isn't being diverted. So for example, when I create a sketchy video, I will use Photoshop, I'll use iMovie, I'll use GarageBand, and I'm using multiple things and sometimes flipping back and forth between them, but it's all part of a consistent, coherent workflow that's uninterrupted. And that's the key thing. My focus isn't being diverted. Number five, take better breaks. There's some great research out there about how boredom can lead to divergent thinking. It's no accident that some of your best ideas happen when you get bored or frustrated. And so when this happens, you go on a walk or you drive in a car and this, you know, random great idea seems to pop into your head. And it's because you're actually hitting a state of relaxed mental processing. You are sort of unwinding mentally, and this slack that's created, this relaxed mental state, this boredom a lot of times is what leads to a sense of coming up with better ideas. Number six, create uninterrupted work time. Now, this can be a challenge, but I found success in having specific time when I work without distraction. My phone's on vibrate, my browser is in incognito mode, so I can't easily check email or log into social media. And I work in a quiet space. I actually have this tiny office upstairs that's a converted closet, believe it or not. And, I go there, or I might go to Starbucks where there's some great white noise that works well for me. And that's where I go to work. So it's completely uninterrupted. Number seven, understand the emotional elements of distraction. And I think this part is important because it doesn't have anything to do with our devices. This is the way that you get distracted because of your mental state. If I'm overwhelmed by too many tasks, I don't do any of them at all. If I'm anxious about an event on the horizon, I stop working. If I'm frustrated about hitting a creative wall on a project, or if I'm scared about that what I'm making will bomb when it reaches an audience, all of those things get in the way of deep work. In other words, being afraid, anxious, or overwhelmed will ultimately kill your ability to do deep work. Notice that many of these trends are difficult to manage in a classroom. We have announcements and fire drills and bell schedules breaking up the learning. We can't control what students have on their devices. But we can shift from action-packed lessons to larger learning segments that push students to think deeply and engage in deep work. When we embrace student choice and incorporate design thinking, students learn the art of deep work and ultimately grow as thinkers and makers. All right, thank you for listening to the Creative Classroom Podcast. Music is from bensound.com. They have some great Creative Commons music. And if you enjoy this at all, I encourage you to leave a comment and a review on iTunes. Thanks a lot and have a great day.